All right. If you had to pick one fictional character who embodies you the most, who would it be?
I thought about this a lot, but I always give the same answer. Don Quixote, the knight of the woeful countenance. I first encountered the story by Cervantes when I was 20, when I was a young man. And the story of Don Quixote may at first seem not to be relevant to the young because it's about an old man reflecting on his life, I guess. You know, there is this romantic ideal about him. Is he mad or, you know, is he just deluded? Well, the older I've got, the more I have become able to understand the character, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And I never really grew up. I'll be honest with you. You know, it's from an early age, I maintained that view of the world that I hope younger people have, that curiosity, the curiosity of Alice in Wonderland, the need to know, that and that driving force behind education. To me, education, understanding the world is the reason why we're here. You know, as a human being, your prime purpose in life should be to understand what it means to be human. And the Knight of the Woeful Countenance embodies everything that there is about being human. His ridiculousness, his absurdity, his love of life, his honesty, his loyalty and friendship, and the believability of a man who puts others before himself because he feels it is his duty. His love of Dulcinea, his friendship with Sancho Panza. You know, they're lessons to live life by.
Beautiful. All right, Night Owl 79. Who's your favorite poet? Does he or she inspire you when you record audios?
Okay, right. I'll be boring again. I'll pick three because I've always told that three is the magic number. I am very partial to Keats, and Owl knows this because recently I posted an audio where there was a quote from a Keats poem in it. I studied the Romantic poets at university, and I quite often lay on my couch in vacant or in pensive mood, trying to look pale and interesting. Right. Keats' Ode to Nightingale, La Belle Dame sans Merci, is still one of my favourite poems. It is evocative, it is beautiful, it is frightening in some respects. Dylan Thomas, who wrote Under Milk Wood, which is a beautiful narrative poem. And he also wrote, the lines, "Do not go gently into that dread night. Rage, rage against the dying of the night," which is what I've referred to earlier. And Ted Hughes, The Book of Crow. I don't know if you're familiar with Ted Hughes.
No, you got me there, buddy.
he wrote a book called The Book of Crow, which is a mythology about this character called Crow who represents the physical, and it's his struggle with the metaphysical. So Crow takes on God. He takes on the universe. There is this one poem about Examination at the Womb Door, it's called. And death interrogates Crow. You know, who is stronger than this death? Who is stronger than this death? And who is stronger than life? And Crow stands in his nest and he says, I am. And Death says, advance, Crow. And it's kind of like the struggles that life will always win. Humanity will always overcome whatever trials and tribulations, because that is the nature of being human. We are survivors, and that is what Crow is. And it is a fascinating book if you ever want to read it.
Interesting. Cool. All right. Have you ever considered doing ASMR because you have a really calming and relaxing voice? There have been some audios of yours that I have thought they were ASMR simply because of your soothing voice.
I don't. What is ASMR? To me, it's kind of weird sort of subgenre of audio where people scratch. They scratch the microphone and they whisper like Bob Ross, you know, like this. And they paint a little bit of magic white. Oh, there's the trees. You know, we'll do it like this.
We're just going to put a pretty little tree over here.
Yeah. I've never considered. No, I don't think that suits me at all. I'm not going to scrunch little scribbly papers in front of you. I didn't do that.
Yeah, you know what, though? I think some people associate him with just relaxation or what we might call like relaxation or calming audios, too. But
oh, okay.
Yeah, I hear you. I look at it from the stylistic standpoint, and I'm on your side on this. They sort of bug me. I'm like, this is weird. But I think a lot of people look at him as just being basically relaxing and non-erotic, you know? So, like, that's possible. Okay,
fair
next
enough.
Question. And sorry, she has kind of a long intro here again. So... What was school like for you growing up there? For example, did you have what we call periods? Okay, I know that sounds weird. Or was there a time when you didn't have a class?
Okay. So you're talking about the British school system.
Apparently, yes.
Primary and secondary education were different. Our secondary education is your high school. I loved primary school. I hated secondary school with a vengeance. I really hated it. I guess our school experiences might have been similar, but I'm going back a long time now, and the British education system, we all wore school uniform. I had an ink pen with a bottle of ink that I used to write with. We had to stand in the hall. I remember our head teacher getting really annoyed about the fact that we didn't know the three verses of the national anthem, so forced the entire school to learn all three verses of the national anthem. You're probably familiar with maybe the first verse. You don't know what the third verse is about. It is very anti-Scottish. It says, save us from the rebellious Scots and all that stuff that's going on.
Do you sing that very often anymore?
Not very often at all. But, you know, and of course, we had corporal punishment in those days. So if you were caught doing something that people didn't like, you would be given the cane.
Right.
Which a friend of mine got. I narrowly avoided it. Oh, I'm giving some secrets away now here. For being involved in a fight in the playground. But they didn't take it any further because it was the other guy's fault.
Well, and I will point out to this young listener that was also common in schools in North America as well. Corporal punishment was acceptable. Oh. The teachers all had a paddle, often with holes in them. Even for me, I remember as a young teenager, there are teachers that still had them in their room. By that time, they weren't really allowed to use them, but they still retained them in their room. So
you were
allowed to take a kid out in the hall and give them a whack. There was a protocol for it, and you know, anyway. So
well, we had that up until 1978. It was the European Court of Human Rights that deemed it illegal in 78. But you've still got some private schools, because private schools can do whatever they want to, that still have corporal punishment. Not something that I'm into.
Yeah, it must have been somewhere in there that it, like I said, it must have been somewhere in the mid to late 70s or so it disappeared here as well. All right. When you visited North America, what was your favorite meal or drink, and where was it at?
Meal or drink. Okay. Well, I will say I visited a friend in Richmond in Virginia, and she introduced me to grits, which I thought was going to be gritty, but it wasn't. And biscuits and gravy and catfish and collard greens.
Right.
Which she took me to this quite famous restaurant, and she said, you know, this is kind of like comfort food. This is the sort of thing that mum used to make and that kind of thing. And it was absolutely delicious. So I would say that's probably my
favorite. Must have been in Southern You must have been in Southern Virginia then.
Richmond.
Yeah, because it splits. You know, actually, that's kind of where the dividing line starts to be here historically. That's interesting.
Oh, okay.
There's a couple of things I'm going to skip because they're repeats. I'm going to move on to Minerva 418, and I'm actually going to have to word this one. So this is interesting, and obviously, you know, if you don't want to answer, then you don't have to. So... I'll ask, you can decide. So, considering the style of audios you do, are you worried about the consequences of having so many potential partners who desire you?
The consequences of being desired.
And kind of related, she says, are there any consequences from what you've experienced? And if so, would you be willing to tell any?
All right.
My problem is that starts to relate to other real life people, if there were, right?
Yeah. You know the problem that a lot of female performers get in the unsolicited dick pic?
Yep. Yeah. I've heard.
I don't know if you've got them, but I have got the unsolicited nude. And I can remember there was one girl who sent me... She sent me a picture of her breasts. No comment, nothing else. Just a picture of her breasts. And bear in mind, I don't know this girl. I've never met her before. So how do I respond? Well, I was young and naive, and I responded. And I said, those are nice. Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, I mean, what are you supposed to say, right?
Like, what are you supposed to say? I mean, it's kind of like if you think the way to get attention for yourself is to flash your tits off, well, I think there's something lacking there somehow. You know, if you want to talk to me, talk to me like a human being. Don't assume that the only value I place on you is sexual, because it's not. And that's one of the consequences. I think a lot of people, a lot of women, and quite a few men as well, actually, if truth be told, view me as Moondance, as being some kind of bloke who is interested only in them as a sexual object. And that's far from the truth. You know, I'm a human being. Talk to me as a human being, and don't assume that the only thing I'm interested in is your value in the sexual marketplace, because it isn't.
It's not. That's one of the interesting things, is, you know, we've gotten together to work on projects. Like, we talk way more about things having nothing to do with Reddit or, you know, sex. We've talked a little bit about relationships, but... You know, honestly, our conversations have little to do with GWA and sex when we talk.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say on that subject?
I think no. It's apart from the fact that there are some women out there who view me as their boyfriend just because I've made them come. Oh, you know, you are the answer to my dreams, and I'm now going to pursue you. Some women don't know how to take no for an answer. That's been an unexpected consequence. Luckily, I've not had too many of them. But there have been a few who have been...
I haven't either. I haven't either. I've had a few people ask, like, hey, you know, can you... I guess I must be a lot scarier than you. Usually I get people are like, oh, you're scary. I didn't know if I could talk to you. And I'm like, well, if you're respectful, I'm happy to talk to you. If, you know, I'm pretty upfront about the fact that I'm busy and I have a full life and I, you know, squeeze this in between work and other things. But all right, cool. Lil Harry Peach asks, what's your favorite type of audios to record?
Oh, any audio that has a good story. I know that's probably not a good answer, but I don't have a particular favorite type. I will look at the story, and if I think it's an interesting story to tell, I'll have a go at it. So,
right. No, I kind of agree with you there. All right. August Inferno asks, unexpected positive to becoming a much loved VA, and unexpected negative to becoming a much loved VA.
Much love, VA. Okay, right. Well, thank you very much, August. I will take that compliment. A positive. When I first started my GWA experience, I didn't expect to make such good friends. That's an unexpected positive. You know, are like-minded people here who I talk to who, like you say, we talk about wider things than just sex. And I have been lucky enough to make some very, very good friends. And a negative is, again, I've referred to this, is the moon dance fantasy. You know, there are some listeners out there, thankfully not many, but some, who seem to think that they are in love with moon dance. And he's not real. Sorry, he's not. He's a character I play. Yes, there are parts of Moondance that are me, but they're not the real me. And that's sometimes difficult to deal with because, you know, you don't want to let people down, but on the other hand, they need a dose of reality sometimes.
All right. Moving on to one of our other friends, an awesome writer, by the way, D. Veldrick returns. So if you can direct any stage play or movie, what would they be and why?
Well, I wouldn't say I've got a particular favorite, but I think it would be anything that I could put an original slant on. And I've seen a lot of stage plays, a hell of a lot of them, and quite a few movies. And when you do sequels, there are very few movies that have good sequels. There are very few plays that have something different about them. The most interesting that I've seen are I've seen quite a few performances of Romeo and Juliet. And I've seen modern versions of them. I've seen traditional versions of them. And they all have something different to offer in terms of a perspective. So if I could take a story and do something with it that someone wouldn't expect. And it's too obvious to change the characters, you know. So let's make Hamlet a woman. No, that doesn't work. something like that. You've got to find an original viewpoint to look at the story. So I can't think of one, really.
All right.
I can't.
All right. If you can publish anything in written form, would it be poetry or novels?
Ooh, that's a choice. I think a novel, because a novel is more accessible to more people. Poetry, yeah, but poetry, you have to have an understanding of the techniques, of the way that the poet has used those, whereas a novel is just a story. So, yeah, I'd have a go at publishing a story.
All right. Do you listen to audiobooks? And then there's a commentary. It says, I find it fascinating that people can absorb information while doing other things in the background while I can't do that. So do you listen to audiobooks?
I do listen to audiobooks. But the audiobooks I listen to are all fiction. They're not information at all. You know, I when I was studying at university, I would listen to the Open University, which in this country, they're sort of radio broadcasts. But you know, I wouldn't try and take in information like that. I'd just listen for something in the background that was a good story.
Makes sense. I don't disagree with you. I have trouble listening to detailed information in audio form myself. Like a story, yes, but a lecture or something, I'm not so good at it. All right. Mm-hmm. Advice you would give yourself 20 years ago, 10 years ago.
I can get very serious here for a minute.
I know. I just, what I realized reading that, I'm like, ooh, based on our earlier conversation, that could get kind of intense.
Okay. My advice that I would give myself is don't think that you can save a marriage by having children. That doesn't work.
Yeah. Anything else?
Pretty much no. I mean, if I could go back 30 years, I know what I'd tell myself.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite countries you've traveled to and maybe favorite memories of those?
Favorite countries. Well, the first country I ever went to abroad, out of England, was Spain. And I've got some very, very good memories of that. This was Spain in the 1970s, my father's country. So we were visiting my aunt and my uncle and my cousins. And I was a very young kid at the time. And one of my favorite memories is, you couldn't do this nowadays. Nobody would allow you to do it. A friend of my uncle's was the local milkman in the village. And he used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and deliver the milk from the back of a wagon pulled by a donkey with a sombrero on his head and two holes cut for his ears to stick through. And I was allowed to go and deliver the milk with him. I didn't know this guy. So we got up early in the morning and I delivered the milk with him, and I used to give the donkey a carrot and a bucket of water. And I'd go and take the milk to the doors, and sometimes the people would be awake and they'd say hello to me, or they might give me chocolate or sweets or something like that. And we'd drink whatever remained of the milk on the back of the cart, and we'd have some cheese. We'd have breakfast with this guy, myself and my cousin. And it was amazing. It was absolutely brilliant. And you imagine your parents letting you do that nowadays. That just would not happen, would it?
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I've got family that grew up in small towns, and just the way you go there and behave even now is just so different than in urban areas. I mean, it would blow people's minds. So, all right. Do you have any new recipes you'd like to try? Kind of random.
a load. I mean, I'm a big foodie. I like my food. Yep. Something I haven't tried. Oof. No, I know it sounds boring, but if I come across a new recipe, I try it straight away. So there isn't anything special that I've thought I'd like to try that I haven't.
That's kind of what I find myself. I'm like, if there's something on sale and I buy it, I literally go to like all recipes or the internet and just throw in like whatever it is and find the recipe. You know, so I guess for me, it's kind of like the other way around. It's like, oh, that looks interesting at the store. I'll make something with it, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. For those that don't know, this Devaldrick's a writer, and so this next question is kind of complicated and it's specific to writing, but I think it's pretty interesting. So it says, we see a lot of female perspectives on why they like themes with vampires or werewolves, but we don't really hear from the male perspective, why do you like these themes? Or no, why do you like these themes and why? Is it more on the pleasure of being the dominant party, or are there any elements that I missed?
I think in terms of those kinds of characters, there is a certain charisma about vampires and werewolves. They are very primal beings. You know, they're born of sexuality, really, aren't they? You know, they right. ignore social convention. They're very much creatures of the flesh. They're suited towards those who consider themselves MDOMs, which I do in real life. I guess there is that element of the bad boy. You know how everybody loves a bad boy.
Sure. I mean, and I think there, you know, I think too, there's an element of risk, right? The idea that the vampire or the werewolf, yes, they're sexual, they're primal, and there's an element of danger, right? So they
absolutely
do want you, but there's also danger or risk there to a degree, right?
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, if we look at the way that vampires and werewolves in popular culture are portrayed, they're always portrayed a little bit as outsiders. And I guess there's a little bit of that in all of us. You know, we all feel disenfranchised at some point in our lives. You know, nobody quite understands me. That's the nature of being a human being. You go through puberty, you go through an adolescence, and you think you're the only one who feels like this until you actually discover that you're not. And that appeals to you because the vampire, the werewolf, calls to you as a character that you can somehow sympathize with. There is an element of power about it. There is an element of primal sexuality about it as well. You know, it's when I've played werewolves, for example, I have almost lost my voice.
I know,
what woman can resist a man who just literally wants to feast on her? You know, it's
Well, not everybody digs that, I guess, but it is kind of fun to do, and I mean, the other thing I think is that you can lose control within the sense of the story, and it's within the context of the story, right? Whereas if you did that as just the boyfriend, like, that's a relationship violation. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, you've got carte blanche to do anything you want because they're imaginary creatures.
All right. Bernadette, 2013. This is kind of random, but do you like to shoot pool, and are you any good?
No and no. I remember my college days. We had a pool table in the local pub, and it slanted to one side, so I got very good at hitting balls towards the left hand side because you could guarantee it was going to go in the pocket.
Right, uneven pool table.
The only other time I've played pool was in a strip club in Jacksonville, Florida. And I played a game of pool against a naked lady, and it was a bizarre you know, she was hanging around, nothing to do, there was nobody else in the club that night. It was a friend of mine who'd taken me there to a local club, and she was very friendly. But if you've ever played a game of pool against a woman wearing nothing but a negligee, it's quite an unusual experience.
I'll have to add it to the list. All right.
It's on the bucket list.
This seems to be a related question, but I'm not really sure if it's serious or not. So I'll have to have some discretion here. So it says, do you handle your stick well? with precision? Or do you play slop?
I like stop it.
I'm sorry, I Bernadette, like, if I murdered your question there. I couldn't.
I like to think that I handle my stick extremely well. And that there's nothing sloppy about my stick handling whatsoever.
Good. Oh my gosh. Okay. Sunlight Cacadia says, what kind of teenager were you?
I was boring. I was a boring teenager. I had a group of friends, and we used to, I kind of grew up in a, what in this country we call working class environment. And my friends and I would have local social meetings with the other gang around the corner, which might involve a little bit of a scrap now and then. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of like it. It was all friendly, that right. sort of thing. Friendly rivalry. Mostly when I got older, I was a boring teenager. My friends were out having a good time every night, and I was in my room reading Shakespeare.
Yes. Okay. She's got a couple other questions about music and TV that you've kind of already answered. So
yeah.
Interest of time, I'll kind of move on. If you wanted to learn another language, which one would it be?
Well, I've always been interested in learning Spanish. And my father, as I've said, was Spanish. He refused, interestingly enough, to teach his children Spanish because...
Really?
He wanted his sons to be English gentlemen. Now, whether his sons wanted to be English gentlemen is a bit of a moot point. It didn't take with my brother, so I kind of inherited the aspirations. And he always... It's a long story, but... he always said that Spain had turned its back on him, so he turned its back on Spain. And I always kind of like regret not having the opportunity to learn it when I was younger. I've tried throughout my life to sort of pick up bits and pieces, but never taken it seriously. But in the past couple of years, lockdown, I've been more into learning Spanish. And Greek, believe it or not. I've tried to take up Greek as well, which is a completely different language. But those are... it's because I'm considering whether or not to move abroad to Spain or to Greece. And I want to be able to speak the language. You know, it's, most people in Europe speak English. But that's lazy. That's late.
That's largely true worldwide, by the way.
Yeah. To understand a culture... to understand a people, you really ought to have some interest in their language.
I agree with you. All right. What's your point of view about reality? Probably reality TV shows is what it should say.
I can sum that up in one sentence. Get a fucking proper job.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right. Ghost of Clara. Who was your first crush, fictional or otherwise?
First crush.
That's what it says.
Joanne Small. My first day at school. You know, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I can remember things back when I was very young. And well, they kind of remember what other people told them about it. But I can remember with absolute clarity my first day at school. I was what we referred to as rising fives. So I was not quite five yet. I was four and a bit. And I did not want to go. My mother had to drag me, kicking and screaming. And I can remember people staring at me as she dragged me through the street into the school and plonked me in the sand pit. They had a sand play area. And I was still kind of like just, I don't want to go, and all that. And this little girl was sitting next to me in the sandpit, and very calmly, very quietly, she offered me a spade. And I sort of looked at her, and I looked at the spade, and she smiled. And I spent I don't know how long it was, the rest of the morning, because we were only doing sort of half days, building sandcastles with her. And when it came to go home, I did not want to go home. I was kicking and screaming. I wanted to stay. I wanted, you know, I'd made a new friend. That girl, Jo Small, was my best friend through primary school.
Awesome.
You know, my absolute best friend. And when she was 10 years old, her family moved to Australia. They emigrated.
Oh, goodness.
And I lost my best friend. And it had always... It always proved to me that men and women... There are a lot of people who say men and women can't be just friends. You know, it has to be more than that. Or you know, the whole lot of crap that goes with it. But no.
Right.
This girl was my best friend.
Sure. Mm. Okay. Introverted cat, do you have a favorite play?
Hmm.
You mentioned some earlier, so I don't know.
I don't know about favorite. I mean,
okay.
I used to spend far too much time at the Royal Shakespeare Theatre, and it was good for me.
Well, and she asked about favorite musical next, too, so sort of interrelated.
Well, favorite musical, I've said, is Rocky Horror. And favorite
right.
play, probably an Inspector Calls, if I'm forced to say one. Because okay. are you familiar with the play?
That is not. I've not seen. I used to go to a local professional theater for quite a while, and that's not one I've yeah. seen. I've heard the name, but I don't think I've seen it either at a professional production level.
It's on the syllabus. It's one that studied in schools here. It's it's a murder mystery where this police inspector shows up at a house and questions the residents. They're all there for a dinner party, very Agatha Christie,
right.
about
right,
right. this girl who's committed suicide. And it kind of leaks out that all of the guests there, although they didn't kill her, are responsible in some way for her suicide, either
okay.
something they did or didn't do. And then the inspector leaves and there's a knock on the door and it's the real police inspector. So one is left thinking, who the hell was this guy then? and it's a study in morals, you know. All
right.
these people, all of these people could have saved this girl in some way,
right?
And they chose not to.
Cool.
Yeah, I would guess that's a fascinating play.
All right. Any book you'd like to see adapted into a play?
Oh dear. Well, I wouldn't say I've got a book that I want to see adapted into a play. There's a book I would love to see filmed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would make a good play because of the setting. A book by George R. Martin. You know, everybody knows about Game of Thrones.
Yep,
what they
yep.
don't know is that in the early 80s he wrote a vampire story called Fever Dream, which is set in 1850s Louisiana. It's set, most of it takes part on a steamboat, a paddle boat, and it's written from the point of view of the captain. And there are good vampires and bad vampires in it. I would recommend that you read it. I'd recommend that anybody reads it. And I don't honestly know why, particularly with George R. Martin's fame, nobody has picked this up nobody's picked up the film rights. It is a beautifully,
right.
beautifully written book. It has some superb characters in it and so many twists and so many plot turns that it would make an absolutely brilliant film.
Cool. I'll have to put it on the list. Sounds interesting.
Mm.
Let's see. If you could have any animal as a pet, what would you have?
An alligator. Alligator Loki. I'd love it. No. I've got another script. Someone is writing a second script with a guest appearance by Alligator Loki in it. Do you know that's fast becoming one of my most listened to audios. Oh God, is this what people really want?
Well, that's how GWA's evolved as a whole subject for perhaps another day. All right. Do you have a favorite place to visit in London?
I mean, apart from the West End, which is where I've spent most of the time when I've been to London, and I don't know whether or not most of our American audience think that I live in London or that all Englishmen spend all their time in the capital city, because we don't.
Right.
When I've been to London, I'll go to the West End or probably the Natural History Museum, which I like wandering around. Yeah.
Okay. And I apologize to this person because I'm going to murder their name, but Asphodelus Ramosus. Okay, Ramos. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You can send. You can send the hate mail. I apologize. Do you listen to podcasts, and have you ever considered starting one?
I do listen to podcasts. Have I considered starting? I did a sort of podcast when I went to the States for my road trip. There used to be, there was a famous journalist called Alistair Cook, and he worked for the BBC, and he used to write every Sunday on Radio 4. You would get his letter from America, so he'd kind of be rounding up for the English audience major events taking place in America at that time, because you know transatlantic travel was not something that everybody did to the States in those days, and we didn't have the internet in the way we do. So he would offer his unique take on political and social events in the States, and I quite like that idea of doing a tour. Wherever I go around the world, just giving an Englishman's view of what was happening in that particular country at that time, and letting people make their own mind up. You know, it's just like in the way that journalists would have been in the 19th century, a proper journalist, and they would have written letters, and those letters would be published in the newspapers, and their letters would quite often be of a personal nature to a friend, to the editor of the newspaper, who was someone they knew very, very well. And they would just give people a view of the world that I guess we don't get nowadays. We don't get that because everybody's got their bloody axe to grind.
Yep. Yeah. One thing that's interesting, I think I mentioned this to you before, but I listen actually to quite a bit of BBC news coverage here. And one of the reasons is it is vastly less political than anything produced here in the U.S. It is the way that particularly the mainstream news media, or, you know, there's now a lot of alternative news media stuff on the internet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of try and take a look at both, but you know, in both cases, you know, they're coming at things from a, you know, largely political viewpoint. And kind of, it's funny to me because I can listen particularly to the BBC overseas broadcast, and it's just kind of neutral. It's just kind of, hey, this is going on in this country. This is going on in this country. In the U.S., you know, the president said this, whether it was previously Trump or currently Biden, and the opposition says this. And it's, how do I say, it's kind of accurate, right? It's just kind of this quick overview of an issue. And even if there's something that's more complex, they're like, here's a 2-minute dive into an issue. And it's not arguing and political wrangling and all the posturing that you see, you know, in the media. And, you know, again, I'm a more politically independent person. So I've always found the sort of slants in the media bothersome. I mean, going back to when I was a kid, honestly. And it's just gotten so extreme. I mean, I can barely even listen to the way the partisan news coverage and memeing is today. So I'm with you. All right. Last question they have on here says, if you did have a podcast, what would it be about?
Well, I think that would be it. You know, it's, I think it would be about my experiences traveling around the world, the people I met, the stories I discovered, you know, the food I tried, you know, kind of like day in the life of, you know, this is, today I am mostly in Florence. This is what I've been up to, you know, that kind of thing. And if people liked, I guess what they're called nowadays, they're called travel blogs, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah,
except
I think
all they're all video blogs now, brother.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. Well, you don't really do too many podcasts by that. It's all like video blogs of pretty people in new places every week.
I wouldn't make a very good video blog then. Yeah. Not until I grow my beard a bit more.
I'm with you. All right. Well, this has been lovely. I appreciate it.
It has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for being my guest interviewer.
You're welcome.
To all those moon dancers out there who aren't familiar with Priest, go and check out his channel. And he is a fantastic voice artist. He's got his new channel as well, haven't you? Where you're hosting various audios. So if you want to do a plug for that, please feel free.
Oh, sure. I mean, they can click on, you know, it's Priest of Aphrodite. The subreddit is actually, hold on. I got to make sure I get it right here. It's Temple of Many Pleasures.
If you include a link, I'll put a link in the description, and I hope people will check it out.
I've a little bit, you know, you've been out with your, you know, health recovery, and I've been out a little bit myself the last few weeks just with work and, you know, being busy. So to me, this is a hobby as well. And I love it when I can do it. But, you know, sometimes I'm busy myself. So,
Well, again, thank you very much. It's been an absolute delight. And I'm going to say good night to you now. And hopefully people will see us again in maybe one or two collaborations coming up soon.
I hope so.
Take care then, my friend. All the best. Bye for now.